This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
Good morning, Anthony Reich. How are you?
Boker tov, shavua tov. Lots and lots of little snippets that I wanted to share with you, but I've parked them all in favor of one story, which I think is really worth sharing with listeners, that's been made public by the IDF over the last few days. And this is the story about the attack deep into Syrian territory that took place on September the 8th earlier last year, September 8th, 2024, which was an attack directed towards an underground compound in Syria that was used for manufacturing precision missiles operated by the Iranians. And this was one of probably the most daring operations in the war so far.
Incredible.
One of those that's really going to go down in history as being incredible in terms of the intelligence that was collected, first of all, and in terms of the way that it was executed. 100 Shaldag soldiers. Shaldag is an Air Force elite unit, combat unit. 100 soldiers were handpicked to go on this mission. They were accompanied by another 20 soldiers from the 669 unit, which is the search and rescue unit. And so you can get a picture of the fact that there was an expectation that search and rescue was going to be required on the ground, and therefore they already sent in 20 search and rescue soldiers along with the combat force. They went in by helicopter. The helicopter ride, we are told, took something like an hour and a half in order to reach the site in Syria, deep into enemy territory. They were supported by aircraft, fighter jets, naval vessels from the Israeli Navy. The compound itself was an underground compound, quite deep underground compound in Syrian territory. It was funded and supported by Iran. And this was really a flagship project for Iran's efforts to arm its proxies, including Hezbollah, including the Syrian army that Iran was supporting, and of course, including Hamas. This elite force of Israeli soldiers went in. They secured the perimeter of the compound in the first instance. The first group of soldiers who landed, Syria has secured the perimeter of the compound. The next group of soldiers came in. They had their maps. They knew exactly where they were going. They knew exactly which rooms inside the compound they were looking for in order to find the planetary mixers and the numerous weapons production facilities that were manufacturing these precision missiles. It was one of those precise operations that went off almost without a hitch, was so well executed and absolutely destroyed the production facility that was on the ground. And we understand that this is a production facility that had been tracked by the intelligence for some years already, watching what was going on there, getting maps of the site, understanding who was who, where the main component parts were stored in, which rooms. This was one of those operations, as I said, which will just be incredible. It will go down in history as having been executed so incredibly. And it even precipitated the Prime Minister commenting on the operation, saying, "I salute our heroic fighters for the daring and successful operation deep in Syria." He says that this one is one of the most important preventative operations that we have taken against the efforts of the Iranian axis to arm itself in order to attack us. And it attests to our boldness and determination to take action everywhere to defend ourselves. So I salute the Shaldag unit, the Shaldag soldiers, and all of those who supported them. Even though this is a few months later, that operation still was absolutely critical in determining the way in which things have gone since that moment.
Yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal. I think how Israel has been. I was actually going through some of the stories, and did you see that there was a report or a judgment that Israeli High Court has ruled that Israel can hold terrorist bodies for hostage negotiations? What do you think of that, Anthony?
I did see that, and I think the comment that was made on that story is that the court is very reluctant to intervene on the issue of security matters, particularly when I think the court is not well equipped in order to decide on these things. There are so many different complexities that are involved in these diplomatic to-ings and fro-ings, and the psychological warfare that's being waged here. And we know that quite a number of bodies have indeed been returned to Hamas and to Hezbollah during the course of the war. There are some that are being held. And I think that if the enemy is holding bodies of our citizens, and they are holding our citizens alive, that we, in the context of this war, should be allowed to use similar tactics in order to secure the safety of our citizens. Because really, this is all about those people who are currently being held in Gaza, dead or alive, and how we are going to secure their freedom. And if we believe that in order to secure their freedom, we need to play some sort of psychological tactics, and the way in which we've determined that we should do that is by holding these bodies, then I find it very difficult to see how the court can intervene on that and decide otherwise. Now, I mean, the courts have got certain considerations. Obviously, we're obliged by the Geneva Convention and as conventions, international conventions like that. But I don't know that this falls neatly into any of those conventions. This is a wartime situation. And this is Israeli democracy at work in terms of the fact that even subjects like this, which perhaps in other countries would not be a question, nobody would even want to question the decision made by the authorities to retaliate in order to return our citizens safely. And yet these are questions which are being entertained by the High Court for reasons which are really related to our democracy. And I think it's okay to use up the court's time to discuss these things, but I also think that the court needs to acknowledge where its expertise begins and ends, and I think they've done that here.
Anthony, did you see the video that was released by Hamas of Liri Elbag?
I did not see the video that was released by Liri Elbag, and let me make a few comments about that. First of all, I haven't watched any of the videos yes. that have been released by Hamas. I can't, and I don't want to, and I don't know that it serves any purpose for me to see what I already know and which I can't undo my eyesight from afterwards having seen it. So I don't need any convincing that our hostages are being treated terribly. I don't need to see their hostage videos, and of course this is all psychological warfare. I want to add even further that Liri Elbag's family have requested that that video not be made public. So if anybody is in possession of the video and sees fit to be distributing it, then this is a special request for you not to do so.
Yes.
Because the family has specifically requested that that not be done. They did release one or two screenshots, still pictures of Liri from the video, and they've authorized for those pictures to be distributed, and we've seen those pictures in the press, and apparently those are okay. They're not pretty. None of this is pretty. None of this is really what we all want to see. But of course, it is a sign of life, and it is part of the psychological warfare that is being waged against us. And from what I understand, the video seems to be a relatively recent one. They've managed somehow to determine that this is a relatively recent sign of life. And so lots and lots of investigation and poring by the authorities over the video to try and determine exactly where the video was shot, the psychological state of Liri, even though she's clearly being fed Hamas propaganda in terms of the message that she sends. But the video itself is more than 3 minutes long. So it's quite a long video and gives opportunity to investigate quite a lot. But as I say, the family have specifically requested not to allow that video to go out and to be watched. And my request is to honor their request in order not to allow that to go out too far and wide.
100%. You know, it's so interesting. You know, you talk about psychological warfare, but I think it's also, it's poking the bear, because you've got these parents who are unhappy because they haven't got their families back. There's also a decision that the IDF has to make of all the hostages. Are they going to request the IDF hostages first or the civilians first? Or how's it going to work? I mean, these are all, it's very nuanced and it's not so simple. And I've requested with one of our other correspondents that I speak to them about the Hannibal Directive later on in the week, which is a very hard conversation to have. But when I look at this girl's face, Anthony, it's telling me that there are things worse than death.
Well, we know that what they're going through is horrendous.
Yeah.
And I'm not in a position to comment about what's better or worse than death, for sure. Yeah. But I know that this is not good. And you're right to say that it's poking the bear. And the way that it's poking the bear is it's creating divisions in our society,
yes,
which is exactly what it's designed to do. Because Liri's family stand up and said, she's alive. So at least we know she's alive. And therefore, whatever efforts are undertaken should be undertaken to release her, even if it might be at the cost of other hostages who we don't know if they're alive or
but
not.
But they don't know that she's alive. Hamas could have put their, I mean, you're dealing with a terrorist organization who will use any kind of warfare. They could have sat each hostage down before shooting them and tell them, right, you're recording this at 50 days,
true,
at 100 yeah, days, at 150 days. They're hedging their bets. You don't know that they're alive. It's
well,
not
I
independently
think that
verified.
Our experts are, I think that our experts are sufficiently able to determine exactly whether that was a recent video or not, in ways in which I don't fully understand.
Yeah.
But even ignoring what is actually being said, because you're right to say that people could say, oh, this is day 972 and I'm here and I'm speaking to you and it could be filmed today, when we're only on day 458, only on day 458.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, we're aware of all of these tactics that could be put in place. But there are different views, even with the groups of hostage families, about what should be done. Some are saying, look, just release whoever we can. Let's not try and do it all at once. Others are saying, the moment you release any of them, you're effectively consigning those who are not released to some sort of a certain suffering and ultimate death, that they won't be released. We've seen that Hamas are willing to send a list of 34 hostages without necessarily detailing who is alive and who is not alive. There were reports that they weren't willing to send the list of any of the names. I'm not quite sure whether some names have now been added to the list or not. There seem to be some conflicting reports about exactly the information that we received from Hamas. The talks have been progressing, albeit very, very slowly, according to the reports that I've read, there are meetings in Cairo and in Qatar, that an Israeli delegation was dispatched to go and talk about it. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has said without a wavering that the reason that a deal has not been achieved is all about Hamas's unwillingness to come to a deal. The fact that a deal has not been achieved is being laid at the doorstep. The blame is being laid at the doorstep of the prime minister and the military brass, who the hostage families are blaming for not giving the kitchen sink and everything else just in order to release hostages. I remain unconvinced that even if we hand over the kitchen sink, that we will get any hostages. I think that This is all being played out in the public in order just to keep it in the public eye. And the moment any deal is done, it kind of falls away potentially from the public eye, especially if all the hostages are released. The hostage families, of course, all want their loved ones to come home, but they have formed a sort of a community where they're fighting for each other, not only for their own family members. And that's been obvious from those families whose family members have indeed returned home or unfortunately have been confirmed as dead. They're still fighting for the others and for the safe return of those who are alive. But there is certainly not a single view. And the moment we receive videos like this and we receive information and we see the negotiations are continuing but not making much progress, then it causes divisions. And that is precisely what it's intended to do. How we avoid those divisions being caused is an interesting question, because I don't have the answer to it, because naturally, as Jews, we all have differing opinions of how we should progress, how we should get to the next step. Even if our ultimate objective might be a common objective, we, of course, don't agree as to how we are going to get there.
One of our listeners, Avi, says, "Morning, Kathy and team and Anthony. Will Hamas even care about the bodies being kept by Israel?" So that was in reference to what I was saying, that
the terrorist the bodies court, that we keep.
Yeah, that the High Court has ruled that you can.
Well, I think that that's up to the military and security establishment to determine. And as I mentioned earlier, quite a number of the bodies have been returned. And I think the reason for that is because Hamas don't really care. There's no value placed upon those bodies, and therefore there's no point in Israel keeping them. I think the bodies that are being retained are the ones that potentially have some value. So Ivy's right to say, do they really care? Because on the, you know, on the continuum of how much they care about their bodies, when you compare our position to theirs, we care much more about the lowest value bodies, if there is such a thing. They care much less even about the highest value bodies. But nonetheless, it could potentially be a bargaining tool. And so I think we are obliged to maintain all cards, whatever cards we can hold in our hands, whatever bargaining tools we can maintain for ourselves. I think we have an obligation to keep those. And I think that that's what the High Court essentially has confirmed.
Anthony Rach, I just want to tell you that it is a privilege speaking to you every single day. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful day. Stay safe, and we'll catch up tomorrow morning, please God.
Amen. Thank you. Have a good week.
You too. That is Anthony Rach and the Israel Report. It is 8:01. Here is your news.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.